Hey there, everyone. Welcome back to the show. My name's Dan Hafner. Appreciate having you back. I am joined by a guest here I'm going to bring on here in a second. We've been on a roll lately with some of these stories and softwares and apps and things that we've been talking about. So today we have a really interesting story to tell you, and a spoiler alert, this platform, well, not the platform, the app we're going to be talking about is no more. So it has already actually went through the whole phase of being built, being used, and then being retired. And we're going to get into why this gentleman decided to do all of that stuff. So I'm going to bring him on here. And this is Charlie K. He is the founder of XJ Music. So welcome to the show. Appreciate having you.
Hi, Dan. Great to be here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So can you share with us the story? So I, as I mentioned, we kind of have the whole story here. We've already kind of set up the tragic ending. What was the story behind the inception of XJ Music? How'd you get it started?
XJ Music started as a music project. I'm a musician in my background, also been a hacker, computer programmer all my life since I was a kid. And I actually started my career in entertainment and advertising. And this is just something that I wanted to do for a long time. It's sort of an offshoot of producing music. As we got into it, and I actually have a patent grant for the system of actually organizing, structuring, and generating these musical composites.
Nice.
And we started off building just like the actual backend software that's generating music. And it seemed like a natural progression at the time. And we're going to talk about why that wasn't necessarily, I think, in retrospect, I don't know what we wanted to do. We built out this entire end-to-end platform, from creating music to an app that you could download, anyone could download and listen to, and is competing for space with other places that you listen to music. So when we, that was really where we wanted to start, was just actually getting the music in front of people.
And that's a very competitive space already. So
exactly, yeah. Very competitive. So that was where it started.
Okay. So what was it? Was it like a Spotify? Was it a, that type of thing? Like, can you tell us a little bit more about what it was specifically?
Yeah. When you opened up the app, and we knew we were going head to head with, Apple Music, with Spotify at the time, and also some other new generative music apps. I'll call out Endel as somebody that has done really well in that space. And so the user experience itself was really critical, that you could just open it, and that for a person who, they don't necessarily care about our entire platform, they don't care about necessarily where the music's coming from, just is it good? And we narrowed in on background music, right? So this is music you listen to while you're doing other things. And whether it's for focus, relaxation, it's not foreground music, there are lyrics. And we built out, because in order to just prove that the instrument itself worked, I had worked with some really close friends of mine, very talented musicians, composers, music producers, and we had put together these three demo projects that were like bands, if you will, and, fully made art for these projects, put together just the entire image. And so when you actually open the app, you see this list of, tracks that you can listen to, but we also had to communicate that it was live 24/7, that each one of these was actually a stream that's constantly changing and playing around the clock. So we looked to Twitch, we looked to YouTube Live, and kind of putting this bright red live dot on all of the channels that you're listening to. So the idea is that somebody with no information about what it is, if it piqued their interest on the App Store, hey, this is a place where I can listen to nonstop music, they get into the app and just immediately need to understand what they're looking at, even though what's going on in the background behind the scenes is totally new and foreign. They need to just be like able to listen to it in the normal space. While it is obviously a lot going up against these venerated apps like Spotify and Apple Music, we're able to leverage React Native, leverage a lot of features that are built into the platforms themselves, iOS and Android, so that within, not a huge amount of effort, we were able to, do things like listening on your headphones, casting to other devices, and put out a product that was, in fact, giving you an option to listen to background music 24/7.
Okay, yeah. When you mentioned that, I did think about YouTube right away. You know what I mean? So that's mm-hmm. that's really, really interesting. So, man, that's I give you kudos for taking on like Spotify and Apple Music and that kind of stuff. Like that had to be daunting right. as hell, man. Like that's crazy. And you have a background yeah. in app development, right?
Yeah, it's something, you know, my career started in entertainment, but because I've been a computer programmer my whole life, you know, I got involved in building apps kind of almost before there were apps. Like we were doing a lot of web work, you know, and a lot of I built web platforms and was involved, you know, even going back to like early 2010s with building a variety of different apps. You know, we didn't have tools like React Native then, and it was a lot more intensive. So yeah, I've kind of run the gamut from startups to freelance advertising type work and working at larger companies.
Okay. Sorry if you see me yelling. The Amazon guy decides to show up in the middle of recording, obviously. So we got dogs barking. So take me through the launch. Like how was it received? What kind of feedback did you get when you were initially putting it out there? How did that whole process go?
Well, we wanted to just get some feedback as early as possible before we started like investing in advertising. Obviously friends and family are good, but we really needed people that were total strangers to us that would not hold back at all with their feedback. We went through usertesting.com, a couple other platforms that, you know, you can find users through. We even tried putting out ads ourselves. So we did just a limited launch to those users, you know, through TestFlight and like the Google Play alpha testing channels, and just try to listen to their feedback as much as possible and started off one at a time, you know, or maybe two or three at a time. And my business partner, Jamal Whitaker, and I like would really sit down and listen to what people were saying and just try to unpack and continually compare ourselves against like some of the biggest apps in the world, which is really daunting, right? At first. But we found that it worked in terms of the actual, like the adoption from being able to run ads to people downloading the app and actually using it. In a span of about 6 months, we had gotten up to something like 50 average concurrent users. And, you know, that was really exciting. Just making small changes along the way, but especially just starting extremely small. The feature set was really limited, you know, things that we wanted to do. We used Agile. I personally was using Pivotal Tracker to manage the project, which is this like really tightly focused Agile tool. So everything you can possibly dream of, you write it down, put it in a ticket. But I think we did a really good job of just kicking things down the road. So, you know, being able to log into the app, not touching it. Turns out we end up building that the entire life cycle of the app. You know, we wanted something that, and actually one of the things that we were able to do, so every step of the way, I just thought like, how can we get the most leverage out of the app platforms, like the, you know, iOS and Android app store platforms? So subscription management, the fact that we were able to do all of subscription management without building user login, you know, was kind of counterintuitive, huge leverage.
Wow, very interesting. Just a random question here. When you ran ads, do you remember what your average cost to, you know, get downloads was? I'm just curious.
I think it came down to like the user acquisition cost was somewhere averaging like $3, something like that.
Okay.
And we, you know, the actual subscription model we started off with was just like 99 cents a month. It's interesting how the app stores will kind of like automatically sort of they put guardrails on your price setting. So it's got to be something 99. They internationalize that to different currencies, but in every currency on earth, you know, it's something 99. So we figured, okay, you know, if that could pay for itself, if, you know, our cost of acquisition is about $3 and we're actually getting users that are, you know, sticking around for even 6 months, like that works. And I guess part of the spoiler there that we'll get to is this was all based off of the kind of early costs that we had, which were in the free tier on some of our backend services.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. I was just curious. I was just wondering what that might be. So, okay. So what would you say, was the biggest thing you learned by going through? And it was kind of funny. You're like, you know, we took feedback from people and then we implemented it. Like, wow, who would have thought? You know, it's so simple, but there's so many people that just like don't do that. And it's amazing. You know what I mean? Sure. Like, anyway, kudos to you guys for that. So just pausing, hitting the brakes there, like up to that point, you know, what was one of the biggest lessons or takeaways that you had learned about like your audience, about launching, about the music industry, about anything like that? What was the biggest thing you had learned up to that point?
One interesting thing that we learned is that people don't, you can't bother people explaining all the details of what you're doing, you know? And when we were trying to differentiate ourselves by talking about it, by putting that messaging in the app up front, I mean, we just confused people. And that was really a critical learning from our early focus testing, where if I hadn't been like, right up front, finding real people, putting the app in their hands, and just, you know, as objectively as possible, listening to what their reactions were, I wouldn't have realized that they were just being completely confused by the things that we were saying. So we really, you know, I mean, just stuff, you know, I could talk about what XJ Music is as a technology and all this other stuff. And we just stripped that away. And, you know, the channels, like from the moment you show up, we had a couple lines that worked well because they left enough mystique. Like one of the lines that just tested the best with people was, we're not playing records back here, you know, just a little bit of a hint that this is different and new. But basically, you know, you just have to segment your audience based on what music they like. We used visual art. We used kind of like words that would come from the lexicon of these spaces. So the three channels that we had and the three audiences that we were pursuing were house music, lo-fi or hip hop beats, and then ambient music, you know, totally ambient stuff. And it's just, yeah, it's like three completely different groups of users. And so that was one thing that we learned, that like, we just have to start with, who are we appealing to? What are they already consuming? You know, and what does that look like? What kinds of signals are they getting from like the music that they're already used to listening to? And so, you know, which, you know, when you're building something, you're so excited about it and you start talking about it, you're starting like from yourself and what you want. But yeah, the big learning was like, we just have to completely strip that away, work backwards from where people are already.
That's really interesting. That's super interesting. And I say that because actually literally earlier today, when at the time we're recording this, I was going through launching my own new platform, kind of startup type of deal in the space. Cool. And I was making an explainer video, you know? And I'm like, now I'm thinking like, man, was that a waste of time? But I think it's also like, I think again, and it's no different with software. I tell people this all the time. Like, you have to focus on benefits, not features. And it sounds like to me, you guys kind of got caught up in the features type of thing too. And I find myself doing that. So I'm not like
pointing, but that's so interesting.
Like, you can just let it go in the wild and just trust people to figure out how to use it. And you're like, yeah, but it does so many cool things. And if you click here and this, whatever, that's super interesting. That's super, super interesting.
My follow-up thought on that is there are so many different ways to test something and to focus test something. And so we had videos that we were making on YouTube. We had like a web presence. We have stuff that we might email people. And, you know, if you're saying you made an explainer video, like you can reach out and find people. And my biggest advice is, do not preface it. Like, don't find people that already know your product. Don't find people that already have any context. Like, your best test user is somebody that just has no idea what they're about to watch, but you have some sense demographically, you know, that they're somebody you're interested in. And then you just hit play and record their reaction. Like, if your users are experts, right? If you're making a platform where like the benefits in a way are the features that you're providing to them, then that might work better. Just find out when you listen to them.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. So that's cool. So okay. So let's start getting down to the eventual demise of this awesome thing. So So how, I mean, how long, take me through that. How long did it, you know, were you running this thing? What ended up happening? You know, it sounded like it was kind of maybe a monetization type of thing. Like what ended up happening? Take me through that.
Sure. Well, sort of, you know, two main outcomes. I mean, one is that XJ Music itself as a technology is still going stronger than ever. I mean, we just mostly realized that we're business to business. Like we are partnering with people that need music in their applications, from video games, live streaming, you know, and spaces. And then the other side of it was just monetization itself. So, you know, and actually that what I think is even the more interesting note is it came down to time. When you have an extremely small team, you have to decide what you're going to put time into. And trying to do everything is just a focus killer, right? So, you know, the first thing, the day that I just literally realized that we needed to do something was just the day that we exceeded the free tier on Amazon CloudFront, right? So it's just like nuts and bolts. We're shipping HTTP live stream. We had a month where, you know, we were actually growing and seeing acceleration and seeing a bunch of things that anybody would love to see in their analytics for their app. But then the month that we blew past the Amazon free tier on CloudFront, we shipped, I think, 2.6 million, like 6 second audio chunks that month. And they just hit me with a super real bill for that. Right. And that, you know, I kind of knew that was coming. Again, if I had even more time, maybe would have gotten ahead of calculating that, but you know, it was fine. It wasn't damaging, but it just plugging those numbers into the equation of how our subscription revenue was going to work out against our costs, whole thing went upside down. You know, and I was immediately aware that, like, okay, we need to shut this down. The good news to us was that this corresponded with just this larger realization that we needed to focus as a business. And you cannot build an entire supply chain from beginning to end. So that was like the big takeaway was, you know, I took a step back and thought, if you just think about the music supply chain, you know, from one end to the other, you got people making musical instruments, musicians using those musical instruments to produce musical content. Then you've got people marketing that musical content and selling it to consumers. And we had just been trying to do the entire thing. You know, we're like, we're building musical instruments, producing music and creating distribution channels and trying to market those channels. So honestly, by the time that we got Bill from Amazon, it was actually kind of a relief. It was the brass tacks of realizing that that business model wasn't going to work that just kind of pushed me to just look at what we were actually doing and just super tighten up our focus. So, and it was just a really, you know, kind of a tough decision because we wanted to have an app, you know, and it's just in a perfect world. It's like, oh, I mean, that was the coolest part. You know, that's the part that you can show your friends, that people can listen to. And so it was bittersweet. You know, so switching, we basically just switched it off, like the music part of it. And we said, you know, with a brief explanation that, hey, this has been a great journey. And just go to check out our YouTube channels where we're, you know, printing music out and publishing it. And even we're able to like run 24/7 live channels through YouTube, which, especially after seeing the cost, like the physical cost of live streaming, a content distribution standpoint, it really drove home like the value that you're getting by leveraging a platform, you know, like that is willing to, you know, it's one thing to think about monetization on YouTube. It's another thing to just think about the fact that they're not charging you for 24/7 live streaming as many channels as you want.
You know, it's funny. There was an app that we were building one time where we were going to incorporate live streaming into it. And I had never done anything about that. And then I went down that rabbit hole and I looked into all these different services and I was like blown away. And I was like, okay, well, you know, if somebody's going to stream live something for like 60 minutes and there's an audience of 100 people, like we were going to get a bill for like 10 grand. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, what? Yeah, nobody appreciates probably like the amount of money that goes into that stuff with like Facebook and YouTube, and it's got to be just stupid amounts of money.
It is. And, you know, this is sort of like an interesting side note. At the same time that all of that was happening with, you know, our app, like I actually am a full-time app developer. I work for Endeavor. The Endeavor owns a lot of events. And so at this exact moment in time, we were in the middle of building the mobile app for Barrett Jackson Auto Auction, which I'm really proud of. It's, you know, you can check it out. It's very cool in terms of like, that company's been auctioning cars for decades. This was the first time that even their own internal staff were able to like look up any car and immediately find it at the auction and navigate to it. But one of the most critical pieces in there, which was built by a few engineers, you know, colleagues that are just like extraordinarily talented low-level video engineers, they, you know, Barrett Jackson already broadcast live video. It's syndicated on television. They've got a trailer on site. They've got a team that knows exactly what they're doing. And we wanted to get that video streaming in the app. And in order to get that, I mean, these guys went absolutely down to the metal, literally going, you know, installing hardware in that trailer. They used a WIP, WIP/WEP. It's like cutting edge software technology. In order to compress that, they had to put hardware in the video trailer on site. And when you are watching that live stream in the app, it's actually using like, I got to admit, I do not fully understand WIP-WEP. It's essentially like peer-to-peer broadcasting, kind of reverberating almost directly out of that video broadcast trailer to your phone, to, you know, to everybody's phones. It still costs, but just absolutely minimum cost compared to running HTTP live stream. At the same time, I mean, it was just really humbling actually to sort of go like, here on the side, we're trying to build this. I'm trying to get my thing going, get out the door. And it's really cool that we can leverage, you know, these tools at all, that standards like HTTP live stream exist. But then I'm showing up at the day job and looking at these engineers that I work with that are just doing like really serious stuff. And realizing that, you know, that was like a full-time job for a few people.
Yeah.
I can't compete with that. Yeah.
Well, that's great. But going back to what we were talking about earlier, you know, you mentioned something right there at the end that was really interesting. You said it was like, well, we wanted an app. And then it was kind of like, super interesting, right? Because there's, I think that's how a lot of ideas start. It's just people that like, they just want the app. There's not like a super need for it. I mean, and if you think about it a lot, like does Facebook, does Instagram like have to have an app? Like, no, they don't have to exist. There's just opportunity there. There's an opportunity. Like you guys probably saw like, hey, look, you know, 90% of our traffic is going to be mobile. We probably should have an app or at least something mobile friendly. And that was going to be the case. And maybe that was a hypothesis that you proved wrong, right? Because I think now you guys kind of got into more of, you said like before, like the desktop type of solution, right? Okay, so tell us a little bit, how did you make that like, you know, transition and how's that model work now?
You really nailed it with the logic. This would be my advice to anybody thinking about building an app. And ironically, I probably could have given you this advice before I went down this rabbit hole myself. So that's like its own.
Well, that's how that works.
Yeah. it's essentially, yes, we all want an app, but you got to start with where are your customers and what are they doing? You know, so if you are a large event that has a whole bunch of people coming into a physical space and walking around, well, there's a really, really compelling case to have an app. Even then, you know, the truth is that what makes that app worthwhile is first party data from a corporate standpoint. I'm not even talking about spying on people. It's like the actual interrelationship between, you know, you want to find a bunch of things that are at this event, whether it's, you know, concession stands or bathrooms or, you know, cars to buy, and you're totally comfortable with them seeing where you are and all, you know, what you're looking at in order to give you a better experience. And so that interrelationship from a standpoint, from the budgeting standpoint, that's what makes it worthwhile. When we started looking at XJ Music like a little bit more critically, it actually became clear to me that where our customers are is working on desktop audio workstations.
Yeah.
They're, you know, they're musicians, they're video game developers, people building audio for video games. They're using tools like FMOD and WWISE and Max MSP and you know, OBS. And those are all desktop tools, right? So it was like we were just playing in the wrong pool, you know? And it was really interesting, actually, how the pieces started fitting together when I took a lot of the backend software that we had built that we were running in the cloud and was able to port that into desktop software that just closed the gap in terms of like the actual engineering that we were doing. Now, we were working just much closer to the environment that like customers were working in. And so all of a sudden our, you know, whereas previously when I'm distracted trying to build this consumer app, and I mean, it was taking up a huge amount of focus, people on my team that were asking for music features, you know, the actual supposed meat and potatoes of what XJ Music is, it was taking a long time to get any of that stuff done because I'm caught up consumer end. So that just, you know, again, going back to the top, like where are your customers? I think so many businesses can start off being run through a kind of a Wizard of Oz style MVP. You can run it off a spreadsheet. You know, think about your customer touch points, whether it's the web or just taking phone calls. And it, yeah, actually having an app, you're going to really want a compelling reason. And that just means like native app, because I still think that, you know, a web application is an app, and probably a great place to start, but building native apps is extremely time intensive.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. And just tying it into the, I mentioned before, the platform that I'm building too, that was kind of that's my hypothesis anyway, was that it is going to be something that's a little more desktop focused. That's at least my hypothesis. But it's also been built as a responsive web application. So it's like, well, if they're on their phone, it can still work too. You know what I mean? But I was like, I don't need a native app for this. Maybe someday, if it proves to be like, yeah, this is something that's in demand, you know, we'll do that. But that was a tough decision for me, because that's kind of where I focused, was in the native world. And then to be like, I don't think my crowd's going to do that, you know? So, I mean, who knows? They might even not use the desktop version or anything like that too. So it's a crapshoot that I'm trying to figure out. But anyway, very cool. Very cool. So, quick question just about like the platform. What does XJ Music like integrate with? Is it integrated with like Spotify? Do you guys use that? Or you said it's like your own stuff, but like, what does it integrate with?
Right. Because, you know, we're realizing now that our business opportunities are going to be partnerships with like large video games, for example, that's my number one right now, because I think that what we've built is a really cool solution for video game music, you know, and that's a much more like informed and specific value proposition. What we're doing is not a generative AI. You could imagine either an AI company wanting to acquire us for the models that we've built and the structures we built out, or adding machine learning into what we've done. But really, it's like most comparable, and the sort of first targets for our integration are just inside of a video game engine, for example, Unity. So like we're working on a port right now, which, even though we have this desktop tool that lets you work on the audio composition, and you know, if you're a music producer, you've got stems of different layers of the music, and depending on what the user is doing in the game, you're going to introduce those stems, take them away, change to different sets of music. And so the tool that we've built, you're going to actually use the XJ Music workstation when you're in the composition process. But then in the context of a video game company, when you're handing that off to you know, the game developers, that's when we just take this piece of our code base, which is the playback engine, and we're porting that into different platforms, you know, Unity, and it's designed to work alongside a tool like FMOD, where that's, you know, a very extensive framework for doing video game audio. But when you're actually doing the music, you're kind of hacking it together and rolling your own solutions. So we want people to feel like they can still do what they've been doing, but this is a really cool tool to get leveraged specifically for your background music.
Okay. Gotcha. So what kind of things are you guys doing now to promote it? Are you, I mean, obviously you're not running ads to the mobile app or anything anymore like that. So, so what do you guys do to promote and get it out there?
What we've been doing, two things, basically. One of them is just getting on LinkedIn Sales Navigator and reaching out directly to people that are working in music, in video games. And that includes also just going to conferences and just trying to network. I mean, that was like the big takeaway, really, was that especially B2B, there's like just be no replacement for finding people that are already successful in their field, already know what they're doing 10 times more than we do. And, you know, we can just try to start a conversation with them and say, hey, look, this is a cool tool. Like these are already people that do their own research on what's available. So pretty quickly you find out who's interested or not. And so we've been able to get some, you know, leads because, you know, once somebody's interested, then we're really investing a lot of time into working with them directly and figuring out exactly what they're doing. And then the other thing is for advertising on the internet or just, you know, web ads, we just completely revised the actual presence. So what you see on xjmusic.com now is designed to appeal to somebody who's using desktop tools. And it's designed so that as soon as you arrive on that landing page, you can kind of quickly sort out whether or not that's something you're interested in. And, you know, just, yeah, just, so we're still running ads, but we're just doing it on keywords that have to do with music composition for video games, streams, and environments. And then, you know, getting people to this landing page and as quickly as possible, making it easy for them to get access to the tool, you know, there's sign up. We're like using Squarespace on the website, which is hilarious because I've been a web developer forever and would have like knocked Squarespace. Oh, I can do that. But you know what? I don't want to do that. Yeah. You know? So that's really what it is. It's just about these trying to build individual relationships with people that are already talented music producers. And so they'll be able to inform, you know, again, kind of really just like a built-in focus test again, that, just one user at a time, trying to understand exactly what they want to do, make sure that it can do what they want to do, get it in their hands.
Yeah, that's super. That's wow. I mean, so if you guys listened to the last episode, I talked a little bit about this individual approach that I'm taking too. So when I hear you say LinkedIn Sales Navigator, I was like, holy crap, that's so awesome. because, you know, I really do think it comes down to being very focused in a niche. Like I think, mm-hmm. you know, when I first started down the entrepreneurial path and I was learning how to, you know, target people and different things and serve people in different ways, I guess I was never really able to like whittle down like, yes, this is exactly mm-hmm. who I serve in this way and I help them with this thing. And I think that's always kind of hindered what I do specifically. But mm. now with this new platform that I'm doing, like when I go out and reach out to people individually, I have this super niche tool and it's like a slam dunk every single time. I don't think I've had one rejection yet. That's you know, great. It's just like, hey, look, man, I'm building this new platform. It's going to do this X, Y, and Z. It's going to help you do this. Yeah, that sounds really cool. Right. And it's because it's that. And you guys probably experience this as well. You're like, hey, look, like we built this tool specifically for you.
Right.
It's like gift wrapped, you know, right. That's like such an, and I think, cause I used to do cold call selling too. And I think like, it's like that kind of stuff gets knocked when you want to like, because I think it's, again, there's so many people that like want to scale. We've been sold this idea of like, man, you can just scale. You can just put ads out and you can just blow up super fast. But that's not always what you want to do, because then you can get Amazon bills that, you know, right. will put you know, take away the Christmas fund for the year. But you know, but I think there's so much power in that. There's so much into that. But yeah, anyway, yeah. I don't want to be a dead horse with that. But the question I want to ask you too is, you mentioned AI here a second ago. Do you guys have any AI built in? Are you doing different things with that? What's the deal with any AI inside of XJ Music?
It's interesting because if you unpack what AI is, then we've got to say it's machine learning. We're using neural networks. We're training neural networks to perform tasks. And, you know, that may expand to whatever level in the future. But most of what we're seeing now, it's still, it's generative, you know. And a lot of what we did does, in fact, use some of those same underpinnings. So it's a stochastic network that's just, you know, it's using what it already knows to generate more and more. But I think what's specifically unique about what we're doing, and it's fascinating to be in this time now where this actually sounds quaint and like old fashioned compared to some of the stuff that's out there, you know, like DALL-E, voice synthesis. But, you know, we're really focusing on letting composers, on letting artists have control over what is going on. And I think that's still, you know, especially appealing to, let's say, like a AAA game studio that is investing in music composition. And it's probably less interesting to people that want something super, you know, instantaneous off the shelf. They can just press a button and get music. So in that sense, we are using stochastic networks, you know, we're doing generative stuff. What I think would be fascinating, like I'm really interested as hopefully after we get some warmth with just working with people actually using the technology in their own products so that we can see that kind of end to end. Okay, like this is extra music out there in the field, people really enjoying the outcome. I believe this could be really appealing to both, you know, companies that are doing big AI work because they still need to come up with these models. They, you know, you sort of can't train a network until you have the structure for it and some kind of an algorithm. So what we've done is logically, I think, a very interesting solution to music specifically. And yeah, I could see a larger company taking that and running with it and taking it to the place where, yeah, you press the button and get music. But, you know, we should all, I think something that I'm looking out for in the AI space in general is better attribution, you know, whether it's DALL-E, or, you know, there's incredible new stuff with a whole video synthesis. You just tell us where that material came from, because it's not infinite. And, you know, these networks are being trained on the outputs that creative people have come up with for many generations in the past. I think the whole thing would be more interesting with better attribution, really. Yeah, that's the main thing.
No, that's interesting. I never gave that much thought. Probably not a lot of people. I mean, that's a really interesting thought. Very cool. All right. So what's next for XJ Music? Are you guys gonna make a comeback someday and like knock Spotify and Pandora off the top of the app charts? Or, you know, what you know, obviously, you know, putting the AI stuff aside that you just talked about, like what else is next?
You know, don't anticipate that we're like with our current team gonna get back into consumer stuff. But it would be really cool to see if in the future that, you know, those are among our customers, you know, or specifically people, streamers, for example, people doing live streaming. This is something you could have running next to OBS and used to publish music. But the missing piece that we realize we don't want to do ourselves is actually being music composers. You know, we build demo music, but it's sort of, we just realize it's so important to make sure that we're serving artists, you know, that have music that they want to create. So I'm hoping what's really next for us is working in video games. It's been the absolute most exciting space because, I mean, the video game market itself for consumers is just getting bigger and bigger. The technology, what's possible in video games is really exciting. And the people working at these big studios making games are putting more effort into music and really every dimension of creative production than I think any other industry.
Interesting. I like it. That's really, really neat. So where can we go? Is it just xjmusic.com? Where can we go to find it out?
Absolutely. Yeah. Just check out xjmusic.com. You know, we'll be continuing to update that with, you know, demos. There's a really cool demo that we're just working the kinks out of right now where we'll be publishing a video of that. And that's where you get to see the live engine reacting as if it were running in the background of a video game, you know, whether you're in combat or you're at the beginning of adventure, the intensity is increasing, and just getting to see it react to all that. I think one quality that we continue to hold on to is just wanting it to be an open box. Like so much of the AI, the generative stuff we're seeing is like trying to take complete credit for it as if it just came out of that machine. And we really want you to be able to like see when you're looking at XJ Music to see like where that sound came from and who created it. So yeah, keep an eye out.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. Well, you heard it there. Okay. Oh, I thought you were frozen there for a second. XJmusic.com. Check it out. Sounds really, really neat. And this was really educational. I think this was really good. I think my biggest takeaway, just personally, is that what you talked about before of kind of just put something in front of somebody and just see what happens. That was super powerful. That was really, really cool. So thank you for all that. So, all right. Anything else to add before we go?
No, that's all. Thank you, Dan. It's really been a pleasure.
Awesome. Yep, absolutely. So, you guys heard it, xjmusic.com. Check it out. Thank you very much for watching the show. I didn't say this at the beginning, but please, if you're on YouTube, subscribe. If you're on Spotify, follow, leave a rating. That really, really helps the show. And share this episode with anyone you think might get value from it. So my name is Dan Hafner. Thank you very much for joining, and I will talk to you guys in the next episode. See you there.